July 4th was not only our Day of Independence, but it was also the 58th anniversary of the Freedom of Information Act, a very, very important legal tool that the media and citizens of this country have for furthering government transparency. And I think now it's even more important in today's landscape. And with us to discuss this is an expert in the area, Chicago attorney Matt Topic. He's a partner of Lovie & Lovie. This is the country's largest and most successful civil rights law firm. You probably see them in the news all the time with huge verdicts in civil rights cases. Matt leads the firm's media and freedom of information and intellectual property practice. He has litigated hundreds of state and federal FOIA cases around the country. He has forced the release of the video exposing the murder of Laquan McDonald, which we're going to talk about. And we're going to also talk about the Mueller report and how he was instrumental in getting some of the redacted material unredacted. Welcome to the show, Matt. Thank you so much for joining us in studio.
Thanks for having me, Karen. And that song was amazing. I've never heard that before.
Well, when you Google for Freedom of Information songs, that's what you get. So kind of the reggae beat, sort of, right?
I love it.
Yeah.
It's great.
Well, I'll send it to you. You can have it. After you take me out to that $800 dinner that you just promised me with the state treasurer's money. So let's talk a little bit about the history of FOIA, because a little bit about who is in favor of it, who wasn't in favor of it, how is it passed, and what is the current state of the law right now?
Yeah, I'm actually going to go further back to James Madison to get us started. James Madison, one of the architects of our Constitution, and this is what he said about access to information. He said, "A popular government without popular information or the means of acquiring it is but a prologue to a farce or a tragedy, or perhaps both. Knowledge will forever govern ignorance, and a people who mean to be their own governors must arm themselves with the power which knowledge gives."
Ooh, so timely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that was a principle from the founding. And over time, you had like court cases and you had some statutes here and there that tried to implement that, but it didn't really work very well. Government agencies routinely violated those things. It was very difficult to get access to records, and it was difficult to enforce those rights in court. So fast forward to the 1950s and into the 1960s, and a Democratic California representative named John Moss wanted to sort of standardize all this into a single statute that would be easier for people to use and easier to enforce. And so he did a lot of work on this issue that, you know, wasn't really in the forefront of anyone's mind at the time, except, you know, I guess those people who were very into this stuff. And he wanted it to be bipartisan. So his co-sponsor was none other than Donald Rumsfeld.
Oh, my gosh.
who went on to many, many things that we all know. So they worked up a bill, and it passed unanimously, which is somewhat unheard of in today's climate. For any, if one side wants it, then the other doesn't. So the fact that they could do this bipartisan, I think, is really powerful. This was during the Lyndon Johnson administration. He was very skeptical of this, and that's not surprising that government officials don't really want their records to be out there for the most part, or they're not. It isn't their first choice, right? So some are better than others, but Johnson was more of the view that maybe government people shouldn't be nosing around what the government is up to. But he did sign it into law in a sort of very quietly. There wasn't a big signing ceremony or anything like that. So that was, you know, that sort of got us to stage one of FOIA in the United States.
So and over the years, it's been changed and added to and amended. And I'm not going to go into all of that with you. But suffice to say, what is the current state of what FOIA? I know there's also state acts that each state has its own like FOIA type of program. But what tells what the government has to give people and who and how and when and where?
So there's a FOIA statute in Illinois. It was passed in 1984. We were one of the last ones to pass it, but we do have one of the best statutes in the country, especially after some amendments post Rod Blagojevich. So and we see this a lot. There were post-Watergate amendments to the federal FOIA. There's a big scandal, and And it's encouraging to see that government officials see, well, there needs to be more access to information when there's been government wrongdoing. And that's
so,
the whole premise.
So that might be one of the only good things that happen when you see corruption, right?
Right. Yeah, indeed. And as we know, we still continue to have that in this country and in this state and in this city, which is why it's a very important law for us to have. So the fundamental principle, the starting point, is a presumption that all government records are subject to disclosure. Now, we're usually talking about the executive branch. So we're talking about like federal agencies, or we're talking about the governor's office or municipalities. It doesn't include Congress. It doesn't include the courts. It doesn't really include the General Assembly. So there's some exceptions to whose records, but for most of what we think of is the law, is the sort of executing the laws, implementing the laws, you are entitled to government records if you ask for them, unless there's a basis in the statute that says the government agency can withhold it. And there's all kinds of bases that they can. They could say it would interfere with an ongoing criminal investigation. They could say they were deliberating about a matter of policy and they were expressing opinions and they're allowed to withhold those. Or people's social security numbers. Or my absolute favorite from the Illinois FOIA is answer keys for public school tests. So students can't FOIA the answer key to the upcoming.
You know,
quiz.
Someone tried that, right?
I always wonder if someone just had the foresight to, and I maybe one day I'll find the answer to that. Whether someone had the foresight to know that would happen, or whether somebody learned the hard way that oops, we need. And that's the thing that happens. So you, over time, the exemption list grows, new things happen, and there, a lot of times there's legitimate reasons why certain information can be withheld.
Well, tell us why this act has been important. Are there some historical facts you can point to that said, hey, if we didn't have a FOIA, we wouldn't have the following information?
So you mentioned it in the intro, but I mean, sort of right at home in the city of Chicago, you have the murder of Laquan McDonald. And that we all saw what happened. We all saw that the police lied about what happened. Police officer went to jail, which is a pretty rare occurrence. You had all kinds of reforms. You arguably had a change in mayor, you know, who was the mayor when Rahm Emanuel didn't run again after that. And all of that happened because we had a law that said they had to release that video.
So how did this go down? Remind our listeners how it went down. We knew that there was this killing of this young man, and there was talk about what transpired, but we didn't see that video. We just didn't. And it was a long time, as I recall, that between the time that it happened and the time it was released.
Yeah, it ended up being almost a year in between the murder and the video being released under an order from the court. So the story kind of starts with a guy named Will Calloway, who's a Southside community activist, who just thought this was a really important issue that should be getting more attention. Jamie Calvin of the Invisible Institute had done had learned that Laquan had been shot 16 times, including many in the back. So that was out there. But the video still hadn't been released. Really, every media outlet in town, and even national media outlets, requested the video. Everybody was denied. They said there's a pending investigation and we're not going to give you anything as long as the investigation is pending. And meanwhile, it had been going on a year. So Will met independent journalist named Brandon Smith, who requested the video. And Brandon had been a client of ours already and some other FOIA stuff. And so he pitched it to us. You know, this is really important. I think it should be released. And I loved the fact that everyone was asking for it and nobody was suing. And so as a lawyer, I get really excited by those kinds of opportunities. And so we were thrilled to do that. So it took a lawsuit. We sued. You have a right. This is an important part of the statute. I probably should have mentioned when I was going through those basics. You have a right to go to court if your request has been denied. And in court, the government has to prove that there's a basis to withhold it. They bear the burden of proof. And it's a heightened standard that is only a little bit less than convicting someone of a crime. It's called clear and convincing evidence. It's almost to the level of beyond a reasonable doubt. So there's a heavy thumb on the scale that says we presume that records will be released. And so the city attempted to defend that in court, and they were unable to prove that it would interfere with any investigation. They have long tried to play this game where they say, well, the investigation is pending, so we can't release anything. But that isn't actually what the law said. They have to prove that it, quote, would interfere with a pending investigation. And they had a chance to do that. And they just utterly failed to do that. And so the court found, yeah, you didn't prove that it's going to interfere with any video. I mean, they already said what they claim to have happened. And so it's sort of disingenuous to say, we can't give you the video because it would interfere with our investigation, but we can tell you what happened and you should just believe us, but don't worry, that won't interfere with
the Well, and I think the whole way that was handled really focused everyone's attention on it in a way that may not have happened, but for the fact that there was this withholding. And you're right. I think, you know, that Rahm Emanuel's not running again and maybe Anita Alvarez not being the state's attorney again, you know, have been chalked up to this very, very issue. And, you know, just drawing attention to something by not producing it, you know, not bringing it to the light of day was a real problem for a lot of people.
They often say the cover up is worse than the crime.
Exactly.
And that's sort of my stock in trade is I'm dealing with, you know, oftentimes government trying to hide something either, you know, innocently or sometimes, you know, not so innocently. And obviously a lot of people, a lot of activists, a lot of community organizations have been pushing about police reform and problems at the Chicago Police Department for literally decades. And I think it's just an example of how, you know, you can sort of catalyze that with a really powerful example of the police completely, you know, just trampling over someone's rights in the most profound way. And so I think that's a thing that FOIA really can do is illustrate those sorts of things to people.
We're talking to Matt Topic. He's with the law firm of Lovey and Lovey. If people want to reach you, can you give out your contact information? Then we're going to take a break.
Easiest way is FOIA, F-O-I-A, at lovey.com, L-O-E-V-Y.
We'll be back in a minute on the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. We are talking to Matt Topic, who is an expert in the area of FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request. Matt, tell our listeners, you get involved in these cases when there has to be a lawsuit, but there's an application process. So if somebody is sitting there in a municipality and they want to know what happened, you know, and they want to get records or notes or something, how would they go about applying for that information?
Well, the process is designed to be pretty easy. And in fact, it is pretty easy, other than, you know, the denials that you might get that you have to deal with. But administratively, it's not terribly hard. You're going to want to go to the website of whatever public body you're interested in. And that can be the state, it can be the county, it can be your local mosquito abatement district. You know, Illinois has a massive number of units of government. They're all subject to FOIA. So there should be a website that will have an email address. It might have an online portal that you can use, or it may have a mailing address or a fax number. You have to make the request in writing. So they will tell you on the website where to send it to. And if you can't find that, just call them up and say, I'd like to make a FOIA request. Where do I send it? Has to be in writing. You have to reasonably describe what you're looking for, which means that a FOIA officer, and that's what we call the people who find the records and decide what to give you, that they can understand what you're looking for. So, you know, if it's sort of like all records about hot dogs, you know, your commercial may be thinking of hot dogs, you know, that might be too vague. So you got to kind of, you know, sometimes you have to work with them a little bit back and forth, and they might say, well, we don't understand exactly what you're looking for, and get on the phone and have a little bit of a conversation. But most FOIA requests really are pretty unremarkable. They get answered, you get what you're looking for, and it doesn't require, you know, anything more elaborate than that. It's 5 business days, and I'm talking about Illinois FOIA requests. Federal works a little bit differently. It's 5 business days for the government to produce the records to you and tell you what they're not going to give you and what the legal bases are. That's where you may see these redacted documents on the news with the black marker comes out,
right,
and they strike out a lot of things. Those are called redactions, and there has to be a legal basis for that. They can extend that 5 days by an additional 5 business days, but that's it. If they want more time, they have to get your consent. And if they don't respond on time, it's treated as if it was a denial, and then you have some remedies available.
Interesting. And it's very quick. I didn't know it was that fast. You worked on getting the Mueller report unredacted. Can you talk a little bit about the Mueller report? Just remind our listeners what that report was and what your involvement was.
Yeah, it sure seems like a long time
doesn't
ago
it?
Now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So this was back in the beginning of the Trump administration. Robert Mueller was appointed as a special prosecutor to investigate Russian interference in the 2016 election and any collusion with the Trump administration. So at the end of that process was a report. Everyone was heavily waiting eagerly to get. And the report was released, but it was pretty significantly redacted. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was in there, but, you know, you'd have a lot of top line stuff, but maybe you wouldn't really have all the reasoning for how they reached their conclusion. And so the report was redacted. You had the dust up between Bill Barr, who was the AG, who released this summary of the report before he actually released the report to give the summary some lead time. Mueller objected to whether that was fairly characterized or not. So I for a number of years had represented a journalist named Jason Leopold, who at the time was at BuzzFeed News. And on his behalf, we sued to challenge all of the redactions to the Mueller report.
And what was the upshot of that?
So there's some stuff we won. I mean, it was a whole smorgasbord of exemptions. There was national security. There was other investigations that might be interfered with. But a big one was privacy. And we run into this in FOIA a lot. Personal privacy is important, but it also it has to be weighed against the public interest in disclosure. And so not all privacy invasions, especially if they're not huge privacy invasions, not all of those are grounds to withhold records. So we ended up going to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which is sort of like one step down from the Supreme Court. And we won over redactions to the decision not to prosecute Donald Trump Jr. He had been involved in some sort of computer hacking type of things he'd been investigated for that were in association with WikiLeaks. And it was clear that Don Jr. had been investigated, but what was redacted was the reasoning explaining why Mueller didn't charge Don Jr. And that is the core of what FOIA is about. That's the biggest public interest there can be, is why did the government reach this decision? And that makes a lot of sense, but that's what the Justice Department withheld. And it took a lawsuit and an appeal to get that released.
I have a texter who said, how is it that the court can seal the records for 75 years in the case of JFK or COVID files? Can you explain that?
So FOIA is a creation of Congress. So Congress can change the statute. Sometimes there's other legal principles that might override that. The JFK investigation, I believe, was a congressional investigation, which places it outside the scope of FOIA in the first place. You know, for COVID, there's a lot of frustrations people have had. And I've done a number of lawsuits, including lawsuits that got some Fauci text messages about COVID origins released, things that what they were saying publicly didn't match what they were saying internally, and that they weren't so quick to dismiss the lab leak theory internally. There's a lot of frustration with that. I don't know that there's been any congressional action like blocking that, but that's sort of the answer. Congress has the ability to change what can be released or not.
We don't have a whole lot of time, but I want to talk a little bit about how your office has used FOIA when it comes to looking at these wrongful convictions that we've seen so many of in the city of Chicago, starting with the Burge issue and continuing with other police officers. Can you talk a little bit about how you've been instrumental in getting those records?
Well, we've represented a lot of people who are incarcerated who are trying to get their state's attorney's office files to see if it was information the state's attorney had that they didn't disclose, which would be a violation of a law called or a court decision called Brady, which requires prosecutors to disclose potentially exonerating information. There was a man who was convicted based on the testimony of a corrupt Chicago police officer named Ronald Watts, who later was convicted of federal crimes, did 2 years for framing a whole lot of innocent people as part of a shakedown protection, you know, extortion racket. So one of those people made a FOIA request to the FBI for the FBI's investigative records of Ronald Watts. And the FBI sided with Ronald Watts's privacy over the public interest in disclosure.
Oh, my goodness.
So we sued on his behalf. And that's all. And this is often how it goes. All it takes is a lawsuit, and then they change their mind and they'll just turn it over. We didn't really even have to litigate it too much. And it turned out that there were communications between the FBI and the Cook County State's Attorney's Office that made clear that the State's Attorney's Office knew that Sergeant Watts was being investigated for this kind of thing, and they still put him on the stand and never disclosed that to our client. There have now been over 200 people exonerated who were convicted based on Ronald Watts's testimony. And some of that sort of started with his with a FOIA request that made a lot of it clear what the state's attorney's office knew.
We have literally a minute, but I was talking to you before the show about the difference between private emails and public emails, and that has come up quite a bit with Hillary Clinton and you name it and Rahm Emanuel. Tell us what the rules are. So if I am a public figure and I'm using a private Gmail address to do public work, is that still discoverable under FOIA?
If it pertains to public business and you sent it or received it as part of your job duties, it doesn't matter what form it is, what kind of account you were using. It's taken actually a lot of lawsuits around the country to establish this principle, but it's what you would expect. You can't avoid FOIA by just using your personal Gmail account. This is a bipartisan problem, and that is true of a lot of FOIA violations. You can trace every presidential administration throughout the email era, back starting with W. Bush. They were using Republican National Committee emails. You had Hillary Clinton. You had people in the Trump administration. You have had people in the Biden administration. It's just the thing that, and it's really a microcosm of what's wrong with some public officials' commitment to transparency, because it is really a slap in the face to the public to try to hide your records through using a Gmail account.
Absolutely. And they're going to continue to do it until lawyers like you make them accountable for that. And then at that point, they have to pay attorney's fees for somebody like you to come in and do it. And that should be some threat, at least to at some extent.
Yeah, fortunately, I mean, one of the really smart things that's in the Illinois statute and to some extent in the federal statute is if you bring a FOIA case as a requester and you win, the government has to pay your fees, which lets me represent people who don't have tens of thousands of dollars to spend on legal fees to do so without having to charge them any money.
Matt Topic, thank you so much for joining us. Give us your contact information quickly.
My pleasure. I'm at Lovey, and Lovey is the law firm. FOIA at LOEVY.com is the email address, and you can find us on the website, too.
Thanks again.